Hi, everyone. This is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy. Be sure to check us out on Facebook and our blog and our newsletter and our great sponsors, your Dolce Vita, Italy Rooting, and Abitivo Casa. And we have a great guest today, a young man, author, who now lives in Brooklyn, but he's got a very interesting birthplace. So his name is Ryan Burns, and welcome, Ryan. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I love it.
Yeah. Cool. So before we go into, you know, your Italian roots and the books and things like that, why don't you tell everybody about your interesting birthplace?
Okay. Yeah. So I was born in North Dakota on a nuclear missile base in a tornado. It was a pretty crazy story. The tornado sirens were going off while my mom was giving birth. I've heard the story from her a lot, and they had to rush everyone into the hallway. Crazy story. Doctor had to come in and give me CPR and all this stuff. We were living on a nuclear missile base at the time in Minot, and because my dad was in the Air Force, so we moved around a lot. That was my first debut. My publishing debut will be a little smoother. So.
I'm sure. Well, yeah, that's certainly an interesting story. I don't know anyone who was born on a missile base. Although now I guess they sell the silos if you want to live in one. So, you know, what got you interested in, you know, your Italian roots in the first place?
Yeah, well, I have always heard the story from my Nana, who is the daughter of Italian immigrants. And she would always tell the story about how her mother gave her a ring that used to belong to an Italian duke and duchess. And I always wanted to know, like where did that story come from? Where did that ring come from? She always told me bits and pieces of the story, but I never quite understood it. And then in 2020, when the COVID lockdown happened, I started learning more about my Italian heritage and writing more about it. And I started writing some short stories, and I thought it would be a great topic for a book because it's always good to write about your own family because nobody else can tell that story except for you. So, you know, I set up a lot of calls where I interviewed my Nana and I took a lot of notes, did a lot of research. I read a lot of other books. That's how I started learning more about my Italian heritage, and I just became obsessed with it after a while. Wanted to learn every little detail so I could relive what my ancestors went through when they came here. Yeah.
That's so great. And you know what's wonderful is, you know, we're losing our heritage, and you know, that's one of my missions is to get, you know, young people involved. So that's great. And I should introduce you to Dante Nazzaro, who's a film guy. Young film guy who's going to be helping us put together a movie, and he's in Brooklyn too. So,
I would love to talk to him.
He's I guess Dante's maybe 26, 27, 28, something like that. But you know, certainly closer to your age than mine, that's for sure.
Yeah, Dante, good name.
So now, is the family originally from Brooklyn?
Yeah. When my family first came from Sicily, a lot of them settled in Brooklyn, not too far from where I am now. Then after another generation, some of them moved to New Jersey. A lot of them joined the military. And after that point, they kind of spread all over the country. And I grew up in, my family lived in North Dakota, Ohio, Illinois. They moved all over the place. So, but now I finally returned to Brooklyn just in August because I wanted to come back here and work in the publishing industry. And this is where all the publishing companies are. So, yeah.
I didn't even know that. And I grew up in New York City. So, sorry. Shows you how much I know about anything for that matter. So, did you ever figure out where this ring came from?
Yeah. I have the book with me. Here's an early version of it. Yeah, My Dear Antonio. And that story kind of. I became obsessed and wanted to learn more and more and more about just the backstory. And so the ring, I have pictures of it on my social media pages. The ring is it's a platinum ring, and it has like a swirl and three diamonds on it. It's done in like the Art Nouveau style, and yeah, it belongs to so my great grandfather, his first wife, who he met when he was growing up in his uncle's barber shop. She was the daughter of a woman who was who, so her parents was a barber and this woman named Maria Minore. And Maria Minore was the daughter of a duke and duchess. And so she went and married a barber, a common barber. That was kind of scandalous. And so according to the story, she was like disowned from her family because she had married a common barber. And then the two of them, around that time, they left Italy and moved to Tunisia, where they started a barber shop. Then they had their kids. So there was some kind of falling out with the family, but she still had that ring. And then she gave her that ring to her daughter. Then her daughter married my great grandfather, was his first wife. But then she died at around age 25 with tuberculosis. It was about 1925, I believe. Pretty tragic, but yeah. And then the ring came down to her friend, who then married my great grandfather and became his second wife. And that's the my great grandmother, and so she passed the ring down. So long story, but yeah.
No, that's cool. Yeah, you have to send me the family name, because I'm gonna have to look that up in the Libro
Oh
d'Oro and see what I can find, you know.
yeah. We don't know who the Duke and Duchess were, because this is all just based on stories from my Nana. I've done a lot of research trying to pin down exactly who the Duke and Duchess could have been. The story is true. I have a few candidates of dukes and duchesses who lived in the area at the time, and some of them kind of match up with the story. So, but you can't really know for sure. So, yeah.
Yeah, what part of Sicily? What were they in?
Yeah, a lot of my family grew up in there's a little town outside of Palermo called Partenico. And it's a small town, and a lot of the Orlandos, that's my family, they come from there. And there's a street there called it's named after Vittorio Orlando, who was the prime minister of Italy during World War I, and he's actually related to us. I go into that a little in the book. My great grandfather is a distant cousin of his.
Ah, that's a great story. Yeah, well, and the reason I asked is, my grandmother was from two noble families, and I don't have any jewelry at all. I wish I did. But there's no jewelry. There's a few. I mean, we found some of the homes, actually visited a couple of the places and things like that. But it's hard to see that. And my hook was I had my great grandfather's card. And that's how I was able to actually find these people. I mean, there's so many people, probably related to some, because there was so much nobility in Italy, high nobility, lesser nobility. I mean, there were dukes and counts and prince, they were all over the place. But to be able to find something, that's fantastic. But to be able to have it, even if it wasn't from a duke or a duchess, just to have that piece of history is fantastic. So where's the ring now?
My Nana still wears it. From my understanding, it used to have three bands on it, and I think she like separated it and made three rings out of it and gave it to her daughters. Pretty sure that's what happened to it, but she still has one of the bands of it that she wears. But yeah.
That's cool. All right. Well, I have to get her on this podcast.
Yeah.
So
Oh, she's
let's queue
great.
her
Yeah.
up.
Yeah.
Because she's probably my age, right? I'm
Yeah.
73, so
She
she's probably in
knows more
that
than me
neighborhood.
about it. Yeah.
So we'll have to definitely have to get her on. That would certainly be a fun interview for sure, especially if she grew up in Brooklyn, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
She
so
grew up in
that's
Brooklyn, not too far from where I'm living now. I just came here a few months ago, so yeah, I'm like getting reacquainted with my roots here.
Oh,
Yeah,
so
in fact,
she must be thrilled that you're down the block, huh?
yeah, they tell me all kinds of stories of what it used to be like. My poppy grandfather, he said he would play stickball in the streets, back in the
Yeah.
1930s, and everything is so different now, he says.
It's I can't begin to tell you how different it is. It's a really I grew up in Queens in and I grew up on College Point. I don't know if you've heard of that. I don't know where that is, but back when I was growing up in the 50s and 60s, College Point's a peninsula and nobody went there because there was nothing
Oh,
there.
yeah. Yeah, it's hard to get there. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was no subway. A couple of buses went from Flushing, but there was no reason to go there when I was growing up. Prior to that, in like the well, in the 1800s, it was actually all the rich people would go there, for because it was the country basically. They would get on a ferry from Manhattan and go to College Point because it was the country. And then, leading up to World War II, there were a lot of factories and things like that. That there was one in particular, like a military plant, which most people wouldn't know. And there was a rubber factory there, and all that industry is it's all gone now.
Wow.
There's nothing. In fact, Lilly Tulip, the paper cup company was there. They had a factory there too.
Wow.
So yeah, interesting stuff. So now, so you moved around a lot with the military then growing up, yeah?
Yeah, we definitely had to move a lot. I was born towards the end of my dad's career in the military, so I only moved when I was 3 and when I was like 5 or 6, and then he retired. But my older siblings, they had to move to a lot of places. It was like Maryland, Florida, Indiana, like North, I think North Carolina somewhere. Like, yeah, they moved all over the place. So, yeah, that definitely takes a big toll on those military families that have to move everywhere. But I was able to keep myself busy with reading and writing. So,
Yeah, that's
so it
great.
worked
Yeah.
out.
And what was your dad? Was he involved with the missile programs and things like that, or what did he do?
He was a psychologist.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah, I love my dad. Yeah, he was a psychologist, and he was one of the first people who was after 9/11, they were one of the first groups that was sent to the Middle East. They were at a base in Kyrgyzstan that was like right gave them like access to Afghanistan, and he was stationed there and helped everyone get established there. And he there was a huge epidemic of PTSD, and that was his career was focused on kind of reforming the way that we treat PTSD for some of these long-term, like forever wars that really grind down on people after a while.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, and it's got to be tough on them because they kept rotating back and forth and back and forth. But people of my generation that grew up with my uncles and stuff like that, they went to World War II and they were there for 3, 4, 5 years, and in fact, one of my uncles was on he was on one of the landing crafts at Iwo Jima. He was in the Navy, and he drove one of those boats that dropped off the Marines.
That's pretty stressful.
Well, he said they didn't know he didn't know they were being shot at until he actually he because they thought nothing was left on the island, and he says then they heard the machine gun bullets come across the top of his head, and then they realized, hey, they're shooting back.
I couldn't imagine that. So my great grandfather, who came from Italy, I covered this in the book a little, but he was there at the outbreak of World War I. And so he was living in Tunisia at the time, and Tunisia was it was a French protectorate. So the French were kind of controlling it, but there were more Italian people living there than French. So there was always this tension that the French government was always worried that like the Italians would take over. And so there was this tension between the French and the Italians. And then when World War I started, they weren't sure like what sides the two countries would take during the war. And so now you have all these Italian people living in an area controlled by France. And it's all, yeah, there's a lot of tension there. But then eventually my great grandfather, he wrote to his cousin who was the prime minister, and then he was able to he got placed as a barber in the military because he was training to become a barber in his uncle's shop. And then so he was sent to the front lines to cut the hair of the generals, all their fancy like mustaches and mutton chops that they had back then.
That's
Yeah,
a
so
great job.
that was his wartime story. Yeah.
You can't beat that. Yeah. Well, my
Yeah.
cousin went to Vietnam and he got off the plane and they asked him, they asked who knows how to cook. He raised his hand. And then they sent him to the mess hall and he had no idea what he was doing. And the sergeant says, "Well, why'd you raise your hand?" And he said, "I figured it was better than getting shot at." He spent the whole his whole tour in Vietnam in the officer's mess in Saigon.
Oh,
And
wow.
they taught him how to cook, and that's it. And he came out and he opened the restaurant and all that stuff.
Wow, yeah.
But I didn't realize until I started doing some of this research that there were a lot of Italians in Tunisia. And my grandfather, my mother's father, he was in the Italian army and fought in Libya. I guess
Oh,
I
wow.
think it was 1910, 1911, just before World War I
Wow,
started.
yeah.
And that's one of the stories why they came. Supposedly, my grandmother told them, "You already fought in one war. You're not going to fight in another one."
Yeah.
And they wound up coming to America because her brother was here, I think.
Yeah.
So that's a fascinating history. That's really cool stuff.
Yeah.
So now the first book is that story. Now you have another one coming out, right?
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com.
So yeah, this one, My Dear Antonio, it comes out on March 26th. So
Oh,
this is the,
that's the new one. That's the new book.
yeah, this, it's a follows the life story of my great grandfather and great grandmother, and it tells the story of how they both grew up, were separated from their family and had to live in Tunisia, and then they kind of got separated, and then they both went their separate ways. She got engaged to someone else. He got married to someone else. But then somehow fate had some kind of plan, and then they still ended up getting married when they were around 30, when they ran into each other in Brooklyn, of all places, and
Crazy.
against all odds. Yeah.
That's just crazy. So what was the first book? The book that's been published. What book is that?
So my first book, was published in 2019, and that book is called Royal Beauty Bright, and I wrote that. That one was pretty crazy to try and get that published because it was my first book published. But I wrote it in when I was a senior in high school.
Ah,
Yeah,
you're making me sick here.
and that was a huge learning curve because then I went into college. And I really wanted to get it published. I didn't know how the process worked, so I just sent out hundreds and hundreds of letters to people trying to get it published. And then I ended up getting a deal with this small, like independent publisher that had like two people working at it. And then they told me that they were planning on closing down the company, and I was like, oh, well, there goes my book. And then we had this idea of trying to like sell the company to someone else to keep it going. And so I found this indie publishing company called Amphora Publishing Group. And I had kind of known some people who worked with them in the past, so I put the two of them together, and they ended up merging, and then it saved my book, and that's how it got published. So I was like, this book's gonna get published one way or another. So, yeah.
Yeah, boy, that's that's a lesson for everybody that's young. Don't give up, and you have to make your own way. You really do.
Yeah, but yeah, that one. So that one was published in 2019. That was my senior year of college, and that one is about it's a historical fiction novel about the Christmas Truce of 1914. For people who don't know, it was the first Christmas in World War I. They expected that the war was going to be over by Christmas, but it turned out that it was turning into this grinding trench warfare. But was just going to go on forever until one person ran out of money, basically, and then so the soldiers started to realize where this was going, and then by Christmas a lot of them decided that they didn't want to fight anymore, and so there are a lot of scattered events throughout the front line where like the French soldiers or the British soldiers they would just put their weapons down, and the German soldiers put their weapons down, and they all just decided they didn't want to fight anymore. And then they had a giant Christmas party in the no man's land in between the two sides, and they made like snowmen and played soccer and gave gifts and stuff like that, and it was totally bizarre because it was nope it was not organized. It was totally spontaneous and grassroots, and everyone kind of just decided on their own. They didn't want to fight anymore, and like no nothing like that has ever happened on that scale before, yeah, it was pretty wild. And so the book is about these two brothers. One of them is on the autism spectrum, and he is mistakenly drafted to fight in the war, and then the other brother is estranged. Because they kind of had a falling out because of the family difficulties of having to raise someone who's on the spectrum. And then so he has to redeem himself by going to get his brother back from the front line. And then they all kind of cross paths on Christmas Day when the truce happens. But yeah.
Oh, that's super cool. That's great. And
Yeah.
it had you know at night, how'd you come up with this idea at such a young age?
Oh, well, I mean, I've always wanted to write books, so I always have ideas that I'm working on, and I had these characters in my head for a long time, and I originally had written this story, but it was in a different setting. It was set like some in my town in the Midwest, and then I heard about this Christmas truce from my history class in high school, and I was like, oh, this is perfect. And then so I dropped them in that backdrop, basically. Yeah.
You're killing me.
Yeah,
That's just so. I wish I could do that. I wish I could do
it was real fun.
that.
And then yeah, it came out in November 2019. So I in November and December 2019, I put together a little promotional campaign for it. I went to some bookstores and did some events, and the coolest thing though was that in I think Rockford, Illinois, they have a historical village there, and they actually do a reenactment of the Christmas truce every year. So
Ah.
yeah, it worked out perfectly. So I went there and I set up like a table. I was selling my books, and then they had the actual reenactment of the event, and that was so cool. Yeah.
That's super cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
The only reenactment we ever went to, we lived in England for a couple of years, and we went to a War of the Roses reenactment, which was really pretty cool. And these guys, they were firing off like 5 and 10 pound cannons. And the whole ground was shaking. I looked at my wife and said, I can't imagine what these guys go through today. Of course, your dad knows, right? Because they would, they're shooting these blank rounds, 5 and 10 pounders, and like it was just unbelievable that the sound and everything like that. But that's really neat. That's really neat. And you've written a bunch of short stories and things too, right?
Yeah, I published about I think like four or five short stories in literary magazines. That's always fun. That's like a good way to like polish up on some skills. And if you have like an idea for a story you want to try out, but you don't want to like write a whole book, it's just like an easy way to test something out. So I enjoy writing short stories. But yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm a very bad writer. You know, I do some things on my blog, and you know, I've done two books, not to any literary acclaim for sure, but I wrote them mostly for myself. And the first one was about, you know, my research and my family, and the second one was about my banking career, and that was easy because I knew everything because it was my story. And also, I didn't have to do footnotes, which I had to do in the first book, which made me nuts, you know. But for, you know, for somebody young like you, or yeah, even somebody old like me who wants to write a book, what kind of, what, you know, what, how would you advise them to start? I guess a short story is a good start to write something like that to see if you could do something. But what other advice would you give somebody?
My advice would be first, just read a lot. Books that are kind of contemporary that have come out maybe within the last 5 years that are kind of in the genre you want. I would just read as much as you can and try and get a feel for like the style and the voice. And then after that, it's usually good to have like a plan for like how you're gonna write it. Usually, I have a kind of like a method for writing where I'll take the book and I'll split it up into chunks, and then each chunk I'll try to just write it as fast as I can. It doesn't have to be good. Don't worry about it too much. But then I write it and I send it off to like a dozen or so people, like friends and families and readers, and then I talk to them carefully and ask for feedback and ask them questions on what they thought of it. But then I rewrite it, and then I kind of just go through this process where I just rapidly try to like make new iterations of each chunk of the book, and that way, you can keep improving it as you go, and then that way you don't write the thing and then realize you made a mistake and you have to go back and rewrite it all. Yeah, and that way, that method is an efficient way of doing it, because sometimes like if you don't have a plan and you don't know where you're going, you can get stuck and then it takes you years and years to finish it. And then, you know, if you're working at that long scale, then like there isn't enough time in the day to like you know, finish everything, you know, if you're doing it that long. But
Yeah, and you know, I kind of did that a little bit with my first book. Not that I knew what I was doing, but I changed direction a couple of times, you know, because of how I wanted to include things and do things that, and you know, what story I was trying to tell. And you know, it does evolve, you know, as you go forward, like you said. So now Burns obviously isn't an Italian name. Have you researched, you know, your mom's family?
My name's Ryan Burns. It's an Irish name. So both of my grandfathers are Irish, and then both my grandmothers on both sides are Italian. So there's a yeah so th this book is about my grandmother, like on my mom's side, about her family. But yeah, there's also a lot of Irish heritage in my family too.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, there's obviously a lot of that in New York. You know, a lot of they mixed and matched, especially back then. Did you find anything interesting with the Irish family?
Oh yeah, there's a lot of cool stories about the Irish side of the family. We actually found that they came from Ireland on my mom's dad's side. They're Irish. They came from Ireland in like the 1800s or something, and the first place they settled was in Newfoundland, Canada. It wasn't Canada at the time, but they settled in a little fishing village there, and my mom actually went to go visit it over the summer, and she took a lot of pictures, and it looks very beautiful. It's on the coast of Newfoundland, and there are all these these tiny little houses that Irish immigrants had lived in, and they had a little fishing village at the time. And there's a lot of she went there, and there's a local historian who knew had all the records and knew everything about the family. He told them all these stories and how there's like a street named after them and everything. And yeah, so I
Wow.
maybe one day I'll write a book about them. That
That's
would be fun.
cool. Yes, that's a that's
Yeah.
really cool. That's really neat. I was only in Ireland once, my son and I. We were in Dublin for a few days. Great. I mean, really great place. And the only place to have a Guinness, that's for sure. Tastes completely different in Ireland. Like the olive oil in Italy, you know, the Guinness in Ireland tastes completely different. Have you been able to get to Italy yet, or you haven't gone yet?
I've never been there, but I really want to go. We still have family there who I've emailed them before, who still live in Partenico. So I would really want to go visit Sicily one day and yeah, just meet my family. That'll be nice. I will need to have a translator or learn Italian or something, because I don't know Italian myself, but
I don't know it either. I've tried so many times to learn it. So you're just starting in college, and but my daughter told me to try Duolingo, so I'm using that now. And actually, that's not bad, because it's what I'm a visual person, so it's got visual prompts and things like that. And unlike some of the other ones, they have you speak, type, read. Give you a story that you have to listen. So it's kind of a different way of learning,
That's interesting.
and it's not exp and it wasn't it's not expensive either. I don't know, I think it was $68 for the year or something like that.
I'll have to try that. Then I can travel there.
Yeah, you get by. You know, you're
Yeah.
that's hand signals work, pointing. Because I don't, like I said, I don't speak it. And of course, in the small towns, a lot of times they don't speak any English. The big places, you get by, and like on the subway, things are in English and Italian. So you know, you kind of figure it out as you go along. And the the menus are pretty familiar for the most part. Just don't ask for cheese on your seafood dish like my wife did. They don't like that.
Yeah.
That's not
Speaking
something.
of yeah, speaking of traveling to Italy, well, my parents visited Italy one time, and they I noticed that you, in a previous episode of this podcast, you interviewed Brett Toman. He's like a Franciscan tour, gives Franciscan tours. They actually did a tour through him. So, yeah, my parents know him. They went on a tour with him to Assisi.
Oh wow. See, you know, it's like such a small world, you know. You never know what you're gonna find out, or you know, who you're gonna run into. That's really fascinating. Yeah, that was a good interview. He's a good guy. And I haven't been, you know, we've gone a few times, but we haven't been up north yet. So we said the next time we go, the last two trips are kind of, looking for family and roots and things like that. But the next time we really want to, you know, go to Piedmont and maybe by the lakes and Pisa and places like that, you know, to Florence and, you know, that kind of thing. But it's, you know, you could look at all the pictures of Italy you want. It's not the same as when you're there. It's such an interesting, kind of diverse place. You have to go back. You definitely have to. You have to make the trip back there at one of these points. But you have plenty of time. You got a lot more time than me. And you know what? If you can, if you're eligible, you should get your Italian citizenship at some point. I wish I did it years ago.
I've heard you can do that.
Yeah, you know it, what's great about it, especially I'm doing it now mostly for my kids, because my kids are young. They're one's 28, one's 26, and I'm doing it mostly for them, because you know, if they ever want to visit, spend any time there, maybe someday retire there or something like that. You know, you get all the benefits of a regular Italian citizen once you go. And And
Good deal.
school is peanuts compared to here. I mean, it's,
Yeah.
yeah. But I have a friend who she lives there now. She's an Italian citizen. She has their equivalent of Medicare, and you know, she's entitled to every single benefit that any other Italian citizen is gets.
Wow.
So you know, in that sense,
Nice.
it's really, really good. And especially if you know, if you ever wanted to buy a house or open a business or spend more than 3 months there and write a book, you know, spend a year there and write a book, you have your Italian citizenship. So
Oh yeah. Well, that'd be nice. Yeah.
that's a good thing to have. And you know, then you could learn some Italian. Well, this has been a lot of fun. So before we go, where can people find you, find your book?
Yeah, so my book is My Dear Antonio right here. It comes out on March 26th. You can buy it on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, Bookshop.com. And if you want to learn more, you can follow me at Ryan Burns Writes. That's my on Facebook, you can look up Ryan Burns Writes. On Instagram, you can look up Ryan Burns Writes. Also YouTube, it's the same name for all the platforms. So you can look me up there, in my website too. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and yeah, I'm really excited to see how this book campaign turns out. So yeah.
I'm sure it'll go well, and you know, I'll do anything I can to help you get it out there. That's for sure. No question about that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I hope we can talk again. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
well, I got to get your grandparents on. That's for sure.
Yeah.
All
Yeah.
right, thanks again.